Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday morning. Loaded show. We already went to Indy, talked to Bob Kravitz, learned a little bit more about the Colts. Tonight it'll be Titans and Indy Thursday night at Nissan Stadium. So get two reactions to Titans games this week. Speaking of that, Corner Pub is your place to check out Titans games, and they've got locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown. They've got great beer specials, including $1 off Yazoo and Happen Harry's draft beers, plus Happen Harry's bucket specials. You can miss Nashville's best pregame show at the Corner Pub downtown this Thursday, as the afternoon show will be there. And starting at 5 o'clock, it'll kick into pregame coverage with Jared and the GM, Floyd Reese, and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, as they get you ready for the Titans and the Colts. And so if you're looking for a place to hang Thursday night, Corner Pub downtown, pregame show will be from 5 until 7 o'clock, and that's brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. In just a moment, we should have Mike Doc Emmerich join us, and we're looking forward to talking to the legendary voice, because it's always fun talking to him.
Yeah,
he's got a book. He's got a book out that I'm going to read.
Off Mic is what it's called, which I think is an awesome title. And it was so cool getting to interview him at the Winter Classic when he sat down at our booth, and it was, what, 30 minutes? He sat with us, and we probably could have gone on for an hour or more and just continue the conversations. That's when he brought up Harold Gill, not Hal Gill, but Harold Gill, which was a lot of fun. So really enjoyed getting that moment with him. And, you know, we didn't know at the time that he was in his last season, and we also didn't know what the season was going to become. But just, you know, crazy to think that you won't hear his voice anymore on NBC.
So we'll hopefully talk to him soon. The Jaguars have signed another kicker, Chase McLaughlin, as Josh Lambeau. It looks like he may be done for the year, as he's got a muscle injury. And I bring this up because this is the fill-in-the-blank number kicker the Jags have had this season.
They got to be at, like, 5, 6, somewhere in there.
That sounds like the Breakfast Club. How many is that? Remember, he gets given more Saturday suspensions? That's another! Like, that's the kickers for the Jaguars.
You done?
At some point, he goes, how many is that?
Not even close, bud.
Not even. Are you through? Not even close. So maybe there's a few more. Who will be kicking the next time the Jags play the Titans?
That is kicker number 6 on the season.
Wow.
Guys, other than Hushka, there's John Brown, and we would think a receiver for the Bills. Brandon Wright, no, not the NBA player from Nashville. Aldrick Rosas, yeah, that's who they've had kicking for them this year.
Wow.
Yeah, because Lambeau's been hurt all year, basically. And they have not been able to get anybody to stick. Well, we'll see if Chase McLaughlin can stick. The Jags' 6th kicker this season. Wanted to, as we're in a little bit of a stall mode, wanted to read something
from
last hour. And we were talking about the Notre Dame situation toward the end of the first segment. And at Jeff Stokes 4 tweeted at me and said, the Notre Dame students were watching people celebrate in the streets after an election. Why not after beating Clemson? I would not do either, but there seems to be a narrative that some things are okay while other gatherings are not. That's a fair point. I mean, neither should be done. But to his point, Yeah, that's true. But we're a sports talk show, so we kind of tend to focus on the sports. But there has been a lot of gatherings here lately around the country that probably, shouldn't be doing. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we're going to sit here and talk about it for 8 months on the sports side, we need to talk about it, period, no matter what it is.
And some of it is like you're just emotions jump in there, and you hope that the people are there at these gatherings or at least wearing a mask and trying to be conscious of things. But, like, the emotions get the best of you, your impulses, you jump in there. I was when the fans were jumping over the barriers and jumping onto the field, I was like, take an inventory. How many people are wearing masks? Most of them were. But still, when they all got out there on that field, it was not a good visual because it was sardines.
Well, and what I'm probably more disappointed than anything, I'm disappointed in what they did in Notre Dame, but a lot of those folks were, 18 to 22. So tend to give them a little bit more of a break than the next person I'm going to bring up. And I feel like I'm keep piling on, but I'm going to keep piling on until he changes his behavior. I think he's I don't know what's going on. I mean, I know this is kind of him, and I know you're on a bigger stage now, so you're going to have a bigger spotlight, and you probably did this a lot more in Starkville, and you just didn't get the attention as much, but now you're at Florida. But, I mean, Dan Mullen, I mean, he's a tremendous coach, but, figure this out, man. Set an example. You are setting a poor example. Did you see what he did at the end of the game? He, did the, the Lambeau leap. He, climbed the walls and up into the stands, and it's like, come on, man. I get it. It's probably your family, but stop. You are the head coach.
You
got to
set an example.
You are the head coach. Set an example. This is not okay. Don't be climbing up into the stands. I mean, folks, we can't act like it's any old year. I mean, you've already had lost games. You've already had to move games. What are you doing? You're the head coach at Florida getting paid millions and millions of dollars. Why are you climbing up in the stands after you just beat Georgia? Yes, it's a great win. Go celebrate in the locker room with the guys that just did it for you. Celebrate with your family when you get home. Don't jump up in the stands. I mean, gosh. I continue to shake my head at Dan Mullen. His actions the last couple of weeks, I don't get.
And you get caught up. You get caught up because your team is playing so well. And it's ironic because his team got hit with a pretty good wave of cases, right, that shut him down for a while. So you would think you would be more conscious of that. And, as we know, the caseload is such now where it's going to get even more challenging each week to stay on the field, right? If this weekend is any indication, the SEC might have another wave of issues. They're running out of spots to put the makeup games.
Yep.
Right? There's already a slate of makeup games some in that December 12th window, but not everybody has that window. So you have one, but if you have two, you're not going to be able to make up that second game.
Looking like a little bit of a scheduling snafu with Doc Emmerich on there, and he'll join us at noon.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So. Maybe I'll read a few more pages of his book.
Yeah, there you go.
Between now.
Give you more time.
It is great. We should mention our buddy Kevin Allen was the one that sort of helped him with the book. And he said these are two guys, particularly Kevin. I mean, I don't know how many times. We probably had Kevin on 150, 200 times. I was trying to estimate in my head, right, from the time that the Predators have been in the league. It may be more than that. Maybe more like 300.
I was going to say, if you were going to say anything less than 100, I was going to say no chance.
No, it's easily
way,
triple digits.
Way more than
easily 100. Triple digits, but I can't think of a better guy to chronicle and write the book with Doc Emmerich. And if you read the first few pages, you'll be hooked. I can tell you right now, I'm already hooked. I'm like, I can't wait to read more of this. So really looking forward to it. So it'll be worth the wait to talk to Doc.
All right, let's do this. Let's kind of stay with that theme because we were going to touch on it anyway. And so this just seems like the appropriate time. Now the third hour is going to be a little bit more jammed up with Doc Emmerich and Jeff Saturday. So that'll be a loaded hour. Elliot Friedman, who joined us not only throughout the entire hockey season, but through the entire shutdown, it was a long time, and a lot of you got used to him Thursdays at 1 like we did, and he was fantastic for the show, and it's almost felt weird not having Elliot Friedman on Thursdays at 1 because he did it for so long. And there's some new news out on that front. We'll talk about, as we sit here in mid-November, you know, what is going on behind the scenes with the next season. So we'll do that on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Mike Doc Emmerich at high noon, Jeff Saturday at 12:30. Things on tap here on this Tuesday edition of Darren Donick and Chase. So let's start with kind of the scuttlebutt, some things that are being tossed out. Elliot Friedman, our insider on our show, a big hockey insider, has been talking to people and things as we look, every week that goes by, more and more stuff will probably start getting circulated out there of kind of where this is headed for the next upcoming season. So, Willie, I'll kind of turn things over to you and let you kind of set the table, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, you know, I would have to say, and I would be curious if you guys are getting the same thing. And these days I haven't been out and about a whole lot, but when I am, the number one question I get from anybody is, when is the hockey season going to start? Right? It's everybody's first question, to me anyway.
If I had a dollar for every time that question came up throughout all this, especially here lately, yeah, I could probably do a new addition to the house.
I can't imagine what Sean Henry and some of the other people get, you know, when they're out and about. But Elliot Friedman, the last time we talked to him, I remember we were asking him, hey, you know, December 1st, January 1st, what do you think? And he was like, I don't know, guys. You know, there was a little bit of a uncertainty that started to creep in to where it looked less and less certain that the league could actually start January 1st. And that was the feeling up until maybe about a week ago. And then the NBA announced that they are going to start December the 22nd and play a 72-game season. That seemed, according to Elliot Friedman, and Pierre LeBrun is in on this as well. There's some good stuff in The Athletic that they have put together. And Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, you know, the right-hand man of Gary Bettman, has been on the record saying January 1st remains our goal. And I'm not sure he would have been able to say that with as much certainty, but they're really working on this behind the scenes. And they've done a good job of keeping a lid on some of the talks, because it's pretty complicated. But I was really encouraged. It seems like the NBA's ability to get started December 22nd has sort of motivated maybe the players as much as anything in gleaning some of the stuff that Elliot has said on the Sportsnet. And I'm paraphrasing because I haven't seen, I listened to a video that they had on the air up there. It's hard to get the Canadian stuff as much for us, especially the videos. So I'm just sort of putting it all together, the basics. But this is what it seems like.
Can you pause for just a second to what your comment of they've done a pretty good job of putting the lid on it? I agree with you, but you know what that signifies to me? Is usually things start getting out there when you're getting really close, right? When you're getting really close to nailing something down. You feel like you see the end point. I kind of feel like nothing was getting out there because they were probably throwing a ton of darts and trying to do a lot of things and talk about a lot of things behind the scenes. And until you start getting it down where you can start kind of seeing a finish line, why would you ever talk, right? I mean, that's what it signifies to me, is if things are starting to now trickle out a little bit, even if it's slowly, I think maybe the end point is getting closer. I think all this stuff before, the reason we didn't hear anything is because, man, they were trying to figure out a lot of things. And there, no telling how many different ideas have been tossed around, right?
Right.
How many different plans have been tossed around.
Especially with all of the uncertainty. We know, for example, in our country, we've now strung together and I haven't seen today, but we had a streak of, what, 5 or 6 days where there's been over 100,000 cases, new cases, a day. Whereas even at Labor Day, not Memorial Day, but Labor Day, we were around 30,000 per day. So it's going up, and people are really worried as the weather gets colder, people are inside, that, you know, where is that number going to go? We've really got to work hard to keep that number down with the masks and everything. So that affects when you can start, right? That's why you're going to hear, you're hearing promotion on our station of that. If you want to watch the games, if you want to be able to go to the games, then we've got to do the right things. So they're trying to pinpoint when they can start based on this. Complicating things more, of course, we know that you can't just go from U.S. to Canada back and forth like you normally would during the season, right? Normally, you take the you take the plane, you land, you go through the customs, and you go. You can't do that anymore. There's a quarantine for everybody. So they're talking about, how do you get through that? Then what are you paying the players? We know you're not going to be able to just fill the arenas and have all the revenue, which is a little different from the NBA, because the NBA gets more TV money. They can play and still bring in more revenue with only their TV money. The NHL, it's critical that they get as much revenue as they can from the gate. And so that's factored in. So I was really starting to worry that they weren't going to be able to start before around February 1st. But so I'm really encouraged to hear this, that they really feel like there's a good shot that they could get started around January 1st.
But isn't this kind of where the, you know, and I know the NHL is going to be redoing their TV deal soon, but, you know, this is kind of where you have to applaud the leagues that got the most they possibly could out of those deals, because the NBA is able to benefit from that, whereas the NHL is trying to figure out how they can get, you know, get some gate to make up some of that. I mean, because hasn't that always kind of been a knock, that, you know, the TV deal wasn't that great for the NHL?
Well, they have not had nearly the revenue dollars that the other sports get. But that being said, it's improved every go-round, and there's another round coming up, and they feel like they're going to get a good deal out of that.
And probably get another network.
Well, there is speculation that they could maybe get ESPN involved. We'll have to see how that plays out. But the product has been really good, and the arrow has been pointing in the right direction in terms of media deals and rights.
Can we get the glow puck back? Can somebody?
Well, that's been talked about too. But I think first things first, you have to get on the ice. And I think the owners are in a position, I think the players are too, of, okay, we got to make this work. We're going to take a hit. We're not going to be able to fill the stands. We're not going to bring up as much money, but it's important to play and keep the season going as much as we can to stay out front, to keep the values of the franchises up. Maybe we can defer some money to the players. And, you know, maybe you don't get as much this year, but you get it down the road when we come out of this thing. So there's a lot of things that they've had to work together on. And the encouraging thing is the partnership is there. You don't have the animosity that the baseball players and owners have, because we know that's going to be a real issue for baseball, because they don't have the good communication and trust back and forth. And the hockey didn't always have it, but they're in a much, much better place now. They have a CBA. They understand the issue, and they're working backwards with how to do it. But, guys, I don't know about you. I was really worried we weren't going to have hockey early in January. Now I'm a lot more optimistic of that.
I was not worried of that. I figured they'd get to this point. I mean, I just did. I mean, there's just too much riding on it. I think what's always been intriguing to me is, we've talked about it so much, but it's been a while, is how are you ever getting back on track, or is this the way it's going to look moving forward? Because at some point, you either have to get back on schedule, or this is your new schedule. And that's what's really intriguing to me. I've said it. The more we've talked about it, I've put it on record. I think that, quite honestly, they should not start their season before December 1st. Just my opinion. I think more sometime in December is more conducive anyway moving forward. But at some point, no matter what the startup is this year, to get back on schedule, you're going to have to cut the season in half, or this is what it is moving forward. I'm curious to know when they do start letting stuff out, or when we get to the point we can talk about this because information is out there, how that gets addressed. Like, what is it? What is this? Is this what it is moving forward? And we'll know. We'll have a good idea, depending on how many games they play. Because to me, you're going to have to, if you're ever really going to get back to the schedule, remember, we would be a month and a half. We would be doing a month and a half of games right now.
Right. So I think it's safe to say, with the NBA announcing they're going for 72, they've already announced that they're going to shorten their season. The speculation on the NHL is it, too, would be shortened. How much remains to be seen. But I do think, especially with the optimism that came yesterday, where, you know, we're making some good headway on a vaccine.
Correct.
So next spring,
but they're saying 2021. Right.
Next spring is optimistic for when you could actually see that go into effect. So we still have some hurdles. So I think
2021 is going to be where we hopefully come out of this and we get back to as normal as possible. What is the NBA and NHL going to look like moving forward if we get back to what is the new normal for them? Is it the old way? Or is it a new way?
Well, I think it'll be the old way. They're going to be wanting to get as much revenue, play as many games as they can.
Yeah, that was my question.
I don't think
the
shorten.
Old way as in starting in October? I'm not talking about old way of games. I'm talking about starts.
So you think they would still play 82? You still think 82 is the number?
I think both of them are going to probably trim, would be my guess. I think the NBA especially. All this load management stuff is really
that's a more of an issue.
That
for
has
the NBA.
Put a really a kind of a stain on the league. All this load management
in the regular season
stuff, So
that's a fair point, but I don't think hockey rolls like that. You know, they don't do the load management. It might make some sense, but I think they're going to be really in a position to where they can't afford to shorten the season. I'm not sure the players would want to try to catch up revenue-wise. I think they're going to want to play the regular amount of games. That's my thought today, but we'll see where it is. The first things that have to come first is that's just getting through this season, and let's keep our fingers crossed that, you know, you could see the light at the end of the tunnel, that next spring, next summer, that a vaccine would be in place and we can start getting back to having the real atmosphere that we want and the fans in the stands.
But what is your guess on time frame? What is it back to the are we back to two leagues starting in October, or is December, January, what somewhere around that, is that the new target for what their seasons look like?
Honestly, I'm not sure they've gotten that far to get to the 20. You're talking about the 21-22 season.
I'm asking.
They're just trying to get through 21.
Right, but I'm asking your gut feeling because something.
Well, I think you would have to say you might need a cushion and might end up a little later than you normally would. And so would you then take that next season and push it back at least a few weeks, maybe November 1st? I don't know.
Ideally, what do you think? Do they want to be at the beginning of October, or do you think any of this has changed their minds? Like, do you think they're going, you know what? October is a loaded sports month. Like, maybe it would serve us better if we started later. I mean, do you think they're having those talks, or do you think it's like the minute we get they have the opportunity to get back to a normal schedule, October 3rd, NHL season begins?
I'm not sure they'll be able to do it this year, but I think you're asking a question. What about every
future
year? I don't know. I don't know if they will go that far with it, but
I think.
I can tell you that, especially from the Canadian standpoint, their clock is locked into October. That's when the season starts. You'd have a hard time selling that to the Canadian audience. I get exactly where you're coming from a broader sports spectrum perspective, Darren. So it's a very important and question that they should get to. But they've got so much on their plate to try to get started. For example, the Athletic polled the players because one big thing is the owners don't want to ask the players to do again what they had to do to complete last season, and that's be in the bubble for some of these guys. For remember, we had on Nick Cousins, the brand new Predator, who was with Vegas. He didn't even go all the way, and he was like, "I ran out of things to eat on the menu. I got so sick of eating at the same places." It was rough, right? Sure. To get through that. They don't want to have to do that again. So they polled them again. How long would you be willing to be in the bubble? 32% of the players, almost a third of the players polled, said not at all. I don't want to be in the bubble. A small percentage said I'll go into the bubble all season if I have to. 62% said half the season or less. So I think what you're going to see is the first part of the season, Mike Russo, who we've had on the show, the fine writer out of Minnesota, he says an idea that's gaining traction is four hub cities, right, where you take, because of the travel, you take the Canadian teams, you put them in their own division. They play each other. That eliminates the problem of taking teams and having to go back and forth across the border. And you do this for, I don't know how long, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and then there are three hubs in the States, and the teams are in different divisions. They play each other. So you can get some games in there where you're not asking the teams to bubble up for 2 months, but it's more like, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, how many games could you get in there? That could at least get you started and buy some time. And then you can assess, can we play in our old buildings and then start to have more of a regular schedule? But this is all a moving target, right?
Yeah. I do feel like in a conversation I had with Steve O'Donnell from NASCAR last week was that at least on their, you know, they've learned some things out of all of this. And I think other sports have kind of learned some things. And so while they need to try and make up some of this revenue and they may have to do it the old way, I do think it's going to be more of a conversation that maybe less is more. And maybe now the mindset of, oh, we have to play, you know, all these games and we have to stretch the season as long as we can, that they'll get a better product if they chop 10 games or something off of it. You know, baseball is one that we've had that discussion. 60 games, that's too few, but, you know, if they got it up to 120 or something like that, does that make more sense? Do you get more people that are willing to go to those games and spend that money because it's a little bit less? So I feel like that conversation is probably being had behind the scenes. Now, again, at the same time, they've lost a lot of money through all of this, so how do they make some of that back?
The model has been there for everybody to observe for a long time, and I get it. That sport forces them to do that. If the sport wasn't so violent, my guess is, you know, because of the money they make, they would just keep adding games and adding games and adding games. So I get it. It's a little bit phony. It's a phony model because the way the sport is constructed, the way it's put together, it's a very, very violent sport. But that model has been there for everybody to observe and realize the model that makes the most money is the smallest model. The one that has the shortest schedule, the lightest schedule, plays the fewest amount of games, is the model that makes the most money. It's been there. Like I said, I know it's a little phony because the way football is played, and you could not do a 65-game schedule because, you know, you'd have no players. I understand that. But we've seen less is more. Less is better for a long, long time. The NFL and college football have not had any issues whatsoever being the shortest sports that we've got, and they make the most money. Less is better. Less is more. It should have always been like this. That motto was there. I've said it for a long time. Nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody cares. This is how we do it. Yet, you don't need to do this many games. You just don't. We just saw it this year. Like you said, 60 is too few. I understand that. But I have said ad nauseum, as Willie knows, you don't need 162 games to figure out who the hell should be in your playoffs. Give me a break. You don't even need anywhere near that. Less is better. Nobody complained about it. And I understand 2020, you just were happy probably that they were playing. But I'll tell you what, it was fun in the race. And now maybe, you know, it's going to have to be a whole lot more than that. But this load management in the NBA, you can't keep raising prices and then have athletes take games off. People pay for stars. People pay to see these athletes.
But that's,
and you're asking them
to
pay
though.
You're right. Basketball is, well, that's not true. The NFL Baseball? Has certainly, the NFL has had their issues, and people complain at the end of the year, too, when all the superstars are sitting down on good teams and going, wait a minute, you asked us to pay premium prices, and Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones and Devontae Adams are on the bench. They're not going to play this game, but yet you're going to charge me full price? That's ridiculous. So the NFL has taken a hit too, but you're right. The NBA has been the one that's really, really, because they didn't wait till the end of the year. They, you know, because of San Antonio, and then everybody else started doing it. They just started doing like game 22. Like, yeah, right. He's sitting out. I know you want to see him, but you know, James Harden's not playing tonight. We're going to sit him out tonight just because it's a long season. Well, fans don't want to hear that. You can't ask them to pay $125 a ticket and buy all the stuff that they do at a game and pay to park and everything else. It turns into a $500 night not to see James Harden, right, or what, Russell Westbrook. That's not how it works, or LeBron James, or fill in the blank. So, you know, if that's what it's going to be, then the NBA should, and I think they probably will lessen their season because of that. Now, the question is, if they take 10 games off and it's, let's say, 72, fine. 72 is the new NBA norm. Does the league then tell the Players Association, yeah, here's the but, though. We're taking 10 off your plate, so we're losing a lot of revenue, but you're going to play. If you're healthy, you're playing. There is no more load management. You don't take nights off because it's just, the you know, we're going to do that.
Well, you're especially going to if play. They want to keep the same amount of money that they're making.
But you're taking this conversation way to another area, which is more of a basketball conversation, and they're just trying to get through the pandemic before they can really assess how you do. That's like a CBA question for basketball, how you would want to do that.
It's probably a CBA question that's going to get tackled. Very soon.
Yeah, I don't even know when the CBA is. We started this conversation talking about, can the hockey season start January 1st?
But I think it'll be for everyone except the NFL. They'll have this conversation because you're not getting the attendance that you used to. If you reduce some of the games, maybe people are more inclined to buy tickets. You have a better product. I love the 60-game product that baseball had. Again, too few games, but the product was good because you got these guys that are still fresh and they're not getting run down. So, but yes, you're right, Willie. I mean, this has evolved into a different conversation, but I think that all the sports should definitely look at it.
Well, it's a conversation gonna be, that's going to be
when you get through the, when you have the financial hit that all the sports are taking, you're going to be incentivized to play as many games as you can and not less. That's how I see coming out. We're just really starting to scratch the surface of the financial hit that all the leagues are taking from the revenue that they're missing. So I don't see what you guys are seeing. I think they're going to go back to the norm as soon as they possibly can. And so I think to answer an earlier question, we were trying to figure out how many games would the NHL play this year. I think the neighborhood is around 60 that they want to play. If you remember the lockout of 2012-2013, they played 48, and they started sometime in January. I don't remember exactly when, but that was – but I think they'll try to get more games in. And so the question is, how do you push the end of the season, end of the regular season, back into April a little bit more? That's what they'd have to wrestle with to not have too many games jammed in there in a compressed schedule. So the speculation is between 48 and 60, somewhere in there, and the players seem to be up for that. And the other point that I was going to make about Elliot Friedman's comments, he said, what does hockey do that nobody else does? They take Christmas off, right? They take the three-day break. And so if you were going to start around January 1st, that's prime time where the team usually needs to be together to be playing, right, and getting ready for the season. That's the last few days of training camp. That's practice. What do you do with that? And if you let everybody go home for Christmas, then you get into the travel and the quarantine and all that stuff. You're letting everybody go. So what do you do? You'd like to have Christmas, but are you willing to sort of sacrifice the Christmas to start a little bit earlier? These are the types of hurdles that they have to get through. So we'll see. Remember, the Predators have several guys in the KHL that are playing, right? Those guys have to come back and quarantine and all that. So players are all over the world. Some are here already training. So it is a big jigsaw puzzle that they're doing their best to put together. But I am way more optimistic that they'll start closer to January 1st than I was a couple weeks ago.
guess we will wait and see. I think more news. I think it's starting to get a little bit closer, which means when you start hearing a little bit coming out, it means probably more news is maybe just around the corner. I want to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and I've been talking about them for years because I've been going there for years, and they've been helping me improve my quality of life for years. And I know a lot of you have been going there as well, and they've been helping you. They've been around since 2007 here in Middle Tennessee, and Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician over there. His wife, Daphne, is the registered nurse, and their experienced staff want to help you. And, boy, they can help you in so many ways. Maybe you've been feeling off. You haven't been feeling yourself lately. You've been feeling sluggish or just not yourself, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. Well, you can go over there and talk to them about hormone replacement therapy. Maybe your levels have dipped really low. It tends to happen as we get older. Look, they've got things that can help you get going in the right direction, and you can start feeling like you again. Face and body rejuvenation, weight loss management, certainly everybody understands that. That's always been a challenge, but especially in 2020, you've gotten out of your routine, and probably you've tacked on some unwanted pounds that you'd like to get rid of. Well, they've got programs and people that can get you headed in the right direction ASAP. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation with those folks, dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Mike Docgemery coming up at high noon here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday. So the Titans recorded 3 sacks against the Bears on Sunday. Is that something that they can do with Phillip Rivers, who is a statue? Phillip Rivers, as we saw on Sunday, has troubles running backwards. He sometimes trips on the yellow line. Can they get to Phillip Rivers? Because I think that's something that you have to do. To an older quarterback who's prone to make mistakes, you got to apply pressure. So is this a byproduct of Chicago's makeshift bad offensive line that happened on Sunday? Indianapolis's offensive line is a lot better? Or do you guys just think maybe this is a sign of things to come? Can they get to Phillip Rivers on Thursday night?
Well, we remember the words of wisdom from Mike Vrabel yesterday. Just because you had a good game against the Bears, don't sit there and admire your home run ball. You got to get around the bases and get ready for your next at bat. And you pointed it out, Darren, Indianapolis is much, much better at protecting the quarterback. Way better. Going into their game against the Ravens, and I have not seen the update, they had only allowed 8 sacks on the season. And we know Phillip Rivers, he is less inclined to just take the sack, right? He's going to try to flick it, right? He's trying to get the ball out.
Which is why he's prone to mistakes.
And that to me is the bigger thing. Can you put enough pressure to make him get rid of it to where he throws you one or two? That might be where the game is won and lost. You heard Bob Kravitz say they've lost 3 games. They gave away 2 of them. And a huge mistake, which wasn't Rivers' fault, but the fumble by Jonathan Taylor that's turned into a touchdown really hurt them in a game that they could have had a big stranglehold. Instead of being up 10-7, which is what the score was, they could have been up maybe 10-13-0 if Taylor doesn't cough it up. So turnovers have been a big problem. But pass protection is probably what they do best, that offensive line. They have not run the ball very well. Of course, Taylor's had some fumble problems. They lost Marlon Mack, and I think they thought they would run the ball a lot better than they have so far this year. But they protect the quarterback. Their problem with the passing game is T.Y. Hilton.
They don't have a lot of targets.
They don't have, right. You mentioned Paris Campbell. They haven't had what they hoped they would get from him. So they don't have a
Jack
lot
Doyle's
of people that's.
Be out.
Yeah, they don't really have the guys who stretch the field the way they did before. And Rivers is not really a downfield guy anyway. So I'm curious what the game plan looks like for this. But I wouldn't expect a lot of sacks here. But can they pressure and force him to make a couple of bad throws?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think, too, we're going to find out, are they going to have Clowney? I mean, if you listen to Mike Vrabel yesterday, when he was asked about that, he goes, he wasn't close enough to go. I mean, what's really going to change, you know, from Sunday to Thursday in my mind? So I would say that they're probably not going to have him. And, I mean, I know a lot, you know, the pass rush looked better without him. Granted, they're going up against the Bears in that offensive line. So I agree, though. I don't think they're going to get a ton of sacks. It's all about, you know, going to be about pressure and hurries and just trying to have this improved secondary make some plays as well. But, you know, if you get to him once, I mean, isn't that kind of a – don't you feel pretty good about that considering what, you know, the problems that they've had on the pass rush this year?
He was sacked 34 times last year. Chargers could not protect him, which was one of the most he's had. Well, no, I guess he's been sacked more in his career, but 34 times last year. He's been sacked 7 times this year. The biggest problem that he's got is he, like we were just touching on, they just have had so many injuries on offense. And if Jack Doyle is up, then, you know, Trey Burton is down, and they just – every time they get somebody up, then somebody else goes down. Paris Campbell's been out basically the entire year. T.Y. Hilton is banged. They just don't have a lot of threats. You mentioned Marlon Mack was injured at the beginning of the season, out for the year. Jonathan Taylor started off great, but has kind of fizzled. Then they got this Hines and this Wilkins and these guys. So they don't have a lot of playmakers. So they don't wow you on offense. But you could also say, isn't that kind of Phillip Rivers' career? I mean, I guess that's probably not fair. He's had a Hall of Fame tight end in Antonio Gates, and this just in, Keenan Allen's pretty darn good. And I guess he's had better weapons his time in San Diego / L.A. But I don't see where they're a real threat on offense. It's not Chicago bad, but I think Chicago and Indy make their hay on defense. And we can make the case that Indy, maybe stats wise, they're better than Chicago, right?
Defense. I think so. They're just a better version of Chicago. But it is it's a similar matchup in that it's your weak suit, Titans defense, against their weak suit, which is the Colts offense. Very strong defense against the Titans strong suit, which is their offense. So it is the same principle. But they have a different way of going about it, right? Both of those defenses. I think if I don't know if this is a real blitz happy team. I'm curious to see just what the matchup is. They're really good at stopping the run. The Bears were a little more prone to giving up run yards, right, than the Colts have been. The Colts pretty much took away the Ravens running game, especially in the first half, and even had some success in the second half. And that's a tough running game to hold down. So I think this will be a great challenge for the Titans, especially if they're without Saffold from the start of the game. But it just sort of illustrates, as you said, Darren, you know, the Colts have their share of issues and injuries. So these are two good teams that both have major stuff that they're trying to get through, right? With the injuries, who's available, who have I got back, can I fix the problem on defense? They're saying, can I fix the problem on offense? It just puts in perspective the challenges of going through an NFL season. So you're always on a razor's edge of, man, if we slip, we're not going to look very good. And if we play our best, we can beat anybody.
What's the over-under on that game?
Let's
Chase?
See. We'll look at that real quick. I think it was 45-ish last time I was looking, but let me see. Somebody, while I look that up, see what you guys think about this. Josh on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. How much value does Desmond King bring in the past 3 years he practiced against Rivers?
Huh? I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that they will use him. Sure. They're going to pick his brain.
48 and a half.
That's the over-under?
Yep.
Does anybody else feel like that is
and the line
this game is destined for the under?
I thought that last night, too, and was wrong. But and it, the Lions moved to 2. Titans favored by 2.
I think that game is going under. Short week.
Yeah.
Indy's good defense. I think that game's going under. 48?
48.5.
48.5. Got to be honest. I'm just going to go on and.
You got your app pulled up? You're pulling
up
the app
right
now? I'm
going to go on and give a gift for the people. Take the under.
Take the under.
Darren says under.
There you go. There's some free money for you.
Oh.
Take the under.
So, Chase, you are shirted up today, right? After
I'm
shirted
up,
I know it
yes.
was very disappointing. The Jets did not get you a win in the silly underdogs. They coughed it up 27-17.
Oh,
things
I had heartbreaks
good.
In both. I had Herm and Arizona State coughed it up, and so
late
did the Jets.
Choke jobs. Joe Flacco's throw for the bomb in the situation he threw it, where they're up by 7, that's one of the worst decisions I've ever seen a veteran quarterback make. What in the heck was he doing? He gave him the ball back.
I was going to say, you just have to – by the way, the Patriots don't get the first down. They're going to have to kick a field goal late. And the Jets had 12
men on the field.
It's almost like I said,
it looked like
I'm starting to believe that they're maybe just tanking on purpose. It's starting to look like they're trying to lose.
There was also a point in time on
the last drive.
The last drive is another example, Darren, where they're throwing little dinks and dunks, screen passes to James White, and it looks like there's no way they're going to get into field goal range, and then whoop, give them about
there
a 15
is.
Or 20-yard pass.
Who was
field
it?
Field goal.
Years ago. Was it Detroit? Or the Jags, was it the Jags versus the Lions, where one of them had like 13 players? It just looked like one was just tanking for a draft position at the end of the year. Remember that game?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I think it
was it?
The Jags.
I feel like it was the Jags or it was the Lions.
Somebody. Titans when they started Matt Mock in Jacksonville.
Ugh, Matt Mock.
Yeah.
Who? While I was looking for the over-under on my BetMGM app, they now have the Titans minus 200 to win the South and the Colts plus 160.
Yeah, well, that's going to change pretty drastically after Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
One way or the other.
Right.
You're saying.
Yeah, those numbers will change considerably. So if you feel good about the Titans, I'd jump on it now because it won't be minus 200 if they win.
Here's another
it'll
one.
It'll go way up.
As you ponder this, and this is an intangible, do you feel like the Titans are past the demons they've had against the Colts? They beat them in Indy last year, but up until then, that was the story every time the two teams played, right? Hey, they just can't beat the Colts. They can't find a way to beat the Colts. They find ways to lose against the Colts.
You mean when they lost like 14 out of 15 times? Yeah, that was the narrative, sure.
And remember the first meet, the matchup here last year where Jacoby Brissett was quarterbacking and the Titans seemed to have the game in the palm of their hand several times and just somehow lost. They missed a couple kicks. You know, Brissett had, you know, they went for it on the fourth down when they, you know, there was a lot of, I don't remember all the details, but I remember the feeling we had the next day is, how in the world did they lose that game? And this was in the wake of Andrew Luck retiring, and you're thinking, you got to beat the Colts now. And they still didn't do it. So are we past that? Or do you think there's still a little bit of mental edge that the Colts have? Is we, you know, for the most part, we've always been able to handle the Titans. Are we in a new chapter now?
There's going to have to be more W's to be say it's they're past it. More W's. Remember, they won like 14 of 15, which is unheard of in the NFL.
They did.
Although
that's why I'm asking.
The Jets are this is the first 9-game losing streak in their history of their franchise. First time they've ever started off a season 0-9. First time in franchise history. They've lost 9 times in a row to the Patriots. That's the first time in franchise history. So there was a lot of firsts last night for the Jets. First time ever in their franchise history. Consecutive losses, the start, and consecutive losses now to the Patriots. All first in franchise history. All right, we will come back, and we will talk to legendary voice Mike Doc Emrick to start the third hour of the program. But right now, with all this weekend's action, whether it's the major golf tournament, In pro and college football, there's going to be no shortage of action. And DraftKings Sportsbook is your place. America's top-rated sportsbook wants you to be in the center of it all. To celebrate Sunday's action, DraftKings is ensuring all new users that you will be covered up to $100. That's right. You bet. They cover with a risk-free Sunday betting on all of Sunday's action. DraftKings will have a special promotion or special promotions, plural, and odds boost, plural, every day of this year's tournament in Augusta, Georgia. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, you will ensure your Sunday bets up to $100. That code again, 1025GAME, during sign-up for a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Risk-free coverage paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.